DW.
Joining me in the studio today is my colleague Charlie Shield, who spoke to the director of the Food Policy Research Institute, Shengeng Fan. And she talked to him about how agriculture and research policy can help us feed the world in times of climate change. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Anke.
Charlie, you talked to Shengeng Fan, who was just about to finish up a 10-year post as director at the International Food Policy Research Institute. Can you tell us a bit more about him?
Shengeng Fan studied economics, and he's pretty much worked in agricultural research ever since he started his career in the early 90s. But before all of that, he told me that he'd had a very personal experience with food insecurity himself.
Well, I grew up in a very small agricultural rural town in Jiangsu province. We basically eat rice. Rice for breakfast, rice for lunch, rice for dinner. And if we're lucky enough, we have solid rice. But in many days, we only have congee, you know, congee, rice soup. That means we don't have enough rice. What do? We just add more water. So I do understand hunger. I do understand poverty. I do understand malnutrition. And I also understand how policy can change that.
And that's pretty much what he's been trying to do ever since, to use agricultural research to make policy change.
And so Shengeng grew up eating rice, and that's like half the world's population or even more. But while rice is such an important staple crop, it's actually also the second biggest greenhouse gas emitter after livestock production. So what other staple crops could be alternatives in the future?
He said that we're going to have to rethink this idea of staple crops. So, as you mentioned, rice production, it emits a lot of greenhouse gases, nitrous oxide and methane. It also uses a huge amount of water. He suggested some alternatives in the form of beans and more vegetables and more fruit and also more plant-based meat substitutes. But another interesting thing that he said was that food insecurity across the globe isn't just about hunger per se. It's also about a lack of good nutrition in general. So not just a lack of calories, but a lack of good calories. And he gave an interesting example from India, where about 20% of the world's hungry live.
The overweight obesity in India is increasing pretty fast. So you can see even within the same family, you see some people are hungry, very skinny. Some are overweight, obese. And even within the same person, I may be very fat. But that does not mean I have all the micronutrients I have, because I can get fat by eating more calories, more wheat, more rice. But I still lack micronutrients, iron, zinc in my body.
So people eat not a lot more than just rice. They need to eat healthy food as well. And of course, not just has the food to be healthy, it has to also be working in times of climate change now, where there's lots of lack of water and food has to be, the crops have to be more sturdy. Now, a lot of people now say that genetically modified crops could be one solution because they are more nutritious and at the same time, they're better suited to these difficult conditions that climate change brings. How realistic are these GM-focused solutions?
That's right. GMO is something that's being promoted more and more. Bill Gates, for one, is a big proponent. But while Shengeng does support the use of biotechnology, as they call it, which also includes things like these plant-based meat alternatives, he said that ultimately it's not a silver bullet. I mean, technology can provide some solutions, but there's no technology that can provide the immediate solution to the political and social problems that keep people poor and keep people hungry.
Even with technologies, yeah, you can double your productivity, triple your productivity in the next 30, 40 years, but that's not enough. For example, the food and agriculture already emits 25 to 30% of greenhouse gas emission. Business as usual, they will emit another 30% or even 50% more in next few decades. So if we don't do something, we are part of the problem.
And so one solution to be not part of the problem, but part of the solution for an individual would be to change our own diets, as far as I understand. But isn't that really difficult to convince people to change their diets? I mean, everybody likes to eat what they eat. And if you tell them, oh, no, you shouldn't eat that, isn't that really hard to convince people to eat good stuff that's also good for the environment?
Yes, ultimately, I think Shengeng agrees that it's really difficult to get people to change their diets. But he also said that it's about a compromise. And often the case is that things that are good for our bodies, that are healthy for us, also tend to be good for the environment. They use less water and they emit less greenhouse gases. He explained it in the form of synergies.
So what you eat really matters to your health. What you eat also matters to our environment, to our climate. So you've got to choose the food that is good for you, so more diverse, more plant-based. In many cases, actually, there are synergies. What I mean is something is good for your health, it is also good for your environment.
Oh, in that case, then I'm already doing a little bit of synergies because I have started to change my diet a little bit. I eat much less meat now. I mean, don't eat much meat anyway, but I've decided that I will eat much less meat. And I know that's good both for the environment and also for myself. I also feel better about it. How about you? Have you changed your diet yet?
I have made some changes. I was raised vegetarian, so I never made that choice consciously. But I'm trying to cut out dairy as much as possible. And I also don't eat rice, but that wasn't an ethical choice and probably shows my privilege.
Potatoes.
Not for potatoes. For beans, vegetables.
So you're really on a good track yet.
All the other stuff. Yes. But like Schengen says, it's about compromise. I mean, our daily choices make a difference. But in many ways, it's also bigger than that.
In some cases, there may be trade-off. That's your personal choice. Okay, do you want to choose something that's truly for the whole society, but in the meantime, you make a small sacrifice? I think it's our choice. You sacrifice a little bit, everybody sacrifices a little bit, but the whole world, whole planet will benefit. We cannot afford to be complacent because the crisis is real. Crisis will become even greater in the future.
So a lot more remains to be done. And that was Schengen Fun, interviewed by Charlie Shield, who was in the studio with me just now. Thanks very much, Charlie.
My pleasure. Thank you.
DW.